dry today. Just got off of antibiotics and thought I was over this mess. But I'm not sure if I am. Thank you for being here. We're glad for your presence. I'm very thankful, especially for those of you who have chosen to come and to visit with us today. And your presence is very encouraging to us. We sang a song a minute ago, number 24. There was a verse of the song that kind of reminded me of a couple of sisters in my life that have touched me very much. It says, "For the joy of human love, brother, sister, parent, child, friends on earth and friends above, for all gentle thoughts and mild, Lord of all, to thee we raise this our hymn of grateful praise." And it is joy to be able to know so many who serve. And there were two sisters in my life who have touched my life in a very special way. Both of them are now dead. One was a lady by the name of Anna Kilgore, who lived in Tucumcari, New Mexico, was a sister there in the church when we were members there, who was always serving others, who spent her life devoted to the widow women and to taking meals to those who were sick and to those who were in need. It was obvious that her life was unselfishly given to others. Another was Mamie Smitherman, the wife of David. And every conversation that I ever had with her, whether it was a time when I was in college and, you know, a troubled college boy, or the time when I spoke with her last on her deathbed, the conversation always was not about her, but it was always about you. She always turned the conversation. She wanted to know what was going on in your life. And that reminds me of where we're going with the lesson this morning in Philippians chapter 4. We've been engaged in a series of lessons, and this is the third and final lesson from this great book, Philippians, the fourth chapter, and especially the latter part of chapter 4, verses 10 through 19, on the secret of contentment. And we certainly find that contentment is a very wonderful, rich Bible word, even used in the context of Philippians 4 and verse 11, where Paul says, "Not that I speak in regard to need, for I have learned in whatever state I am to be content." The word content simply meaning to be satisfied or to be self-sufficient. The Stoics used it in reference to a state of blessedness from which one was indifferent to external circumstances or stimuli. Certainly, Paul would tell us that our sufficiency is of Christ. And there's another way in which I like to think of this word contentment. I like to think of it in terms of the calm in the midst of the storm. Many years ago, when I was a young man, I remember on a camping trip where my grandparents had been invited, several family members, and a storm came up, and the wind blew and howled, and it literally blew the camp off the shore. And in the middle of the night, we were forced to leave our tent, and we were forced to go into our cars, our vehicles. And my grandmother and two of my cousins were in one vehicle, and the wind was blowing, and you could feel the car rocking. And, of course, two little boys, and we were afraid. And my grandmother said, "Now, boys, one of you will start and lead a prayer, and when he is finished, I want another to lead a prayer." Literally, the thoughts of God brought a sense of calm in the midst of the storm. And that's what I like to think of when I think of this word contentment, a very wonderful Bible word. And in Philippians 4, Paul does give us some secrets to contentment, some of them that we've looked at in previous lessons. First of all, verse 10, confidence in providence, confidence in the care, loving care of God. Learning to be satisfied with little, verse 11. Learning to live your life independent of circumstances and independent of your surroundings, verse 12. And being content with divine power, verse 13, where Paul says, "I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me." Now the fifth and final point, which is the point basically of the lesson today, and that is that Paul would tell us that a secret to contentment is learning to be preoccupied with the well-being of others. I would suggest to you that two of the happiest ladies that ever lived on the face of the earth were Anna Kilgore and Mamie Smitherman, because they were always preoccupied with your well-being rather than with themselves. And that's what Paul says. But the problem is that so many of us are rather discontent because of trying to get people to live their lives and to fit their lives within our mold. I've known many mothers and fathers who would try to force their child into their plan and into their agenda, their pre-written plan and their pre-written agenda. If you're concerned about yourself rather than others, then you're not going to find, if you're selfish, then you're not going to find the Bible secret to contentment. And this was the gist of Paul's letter, basically. I like to think of Philippians as a thank you note from Paul to the brethren at Philippi. But notice that also in this letter, there was a tone of concern about their spiritual well-being. For example, in chapter 1 and verse 9, he says, "And this I pray, that your love may abound still more and more in knowledge and in all discernment." He was concerned about the spiritual well-being and welfare of the church. And in Philippians 2, he was concerned about their unity. He says in Philippians 2, "Let nothing be done through selfish ambition or conceit, but in lowliness of mind, let each esteem other better than himself. Let each of you look out not only for his own interest, but also for the interest of others." It's interesting that in his concern for them, he also gives them one of the tidbits or secrets to contentment, and that is, learn to be concerned about the well-being of your brother. And that's the point, basically, of chapter 4, and especially verses 14 through 19, which are the verses that we want to focus for a little while upon this morning. First of all, consider with me, beginning in verse 14, that Paul uses the word nevertheless. It's a connecting word. It connects with thoughts that he has previously spoken of. For example, "I know how to be abased and I know how to abound. Everywhere in all things I have learned both to be full and to be hungry, both to abound and suffer need. I can do all things through Christ who strengthened me. I am relying upon the power of God. I am relying upon the strength that comes from God. Nevertheless, Philippians, nevertheless, you have done well in that you have shared in my distress." Remember that the Philippian letter was written from prison. And during this time, we find that the Philippian brethren had sent a young gentleman by the name of Epaphroditus, who is mentioned in the second chapter, to minister to Paul. Look over in chapter 2, and beginning with verse 25, Philippians 2 and verse 25, where Paul says, "Yet I considered it necessary to send to you Epaphroditus, my brother, fellow worker, fellow soldier, but your messenger and the one who ministered to my need, since he was longing for you all and was distressed because you had heard that he was sick. For indeed he was sick almost unto death. But God had mercy upon him, and not on him only, but on me also, lest I should have sorrow upon sorrow. Therefore I sent the more eagerly, that when you see him again, you may rejoice and may be less sorrowful. Receive him therefore in the Lord with all gladness, and hold such men in esteem, because for the work of Christ he came close to death, not regarding his life, to supply what was lacking in your service toward me." The point is that they had sent Epaphroditus, they had heard that Paul was in prison, and they had sent this servant down to minister to Paul. It was a wonderful and gracious and sacrificial gift that they had given. Paul even mentions that in chapter 2, Epaphroditus, this wonderful servant, had nearly lost his life as he had come to Rome to minister to Paul the prisoner. Now Paul says, "I'm going to send him back. And I'm going to send him back with this letter." And you can imagine the brethren at Philippi, they begin to open the letter and they begin to look at certain things. For example, in Philippians 4 and verse 11, they read that Paul says, "He has no wants or needs. Not that I speak in regard to need, for I've learned in whatever state I am to be content." And in verse 12, he's learned to be satisfied with little. "I know how to be abased and I know how to abound. Everywhere in all things I know how to be full. Everywhere in all things I've learned both to be full and to be hungry, both to abound and to suffer need." And they read in verse 13, "I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me." So here's a man who says, "God's going to take care of me no matter what. I've learned to be satisfied with little. I have no needs. I have no wants. And they will begin to say, well, maybe we made a mistake. Why did we offer this generous gift and send this wonderful servant to a man who was relying upon the power and providence of God? Maybe we made a mistake. Thus, Paul interjects, nevertheless, he says, you have done well. You have done what is right and lovely and good. It was good for you to serve me. But why was it good? Why would Paul make such a statement? Well, let's follow him and we begin to learn and see how Paul develops the text. Next, we go to verse 15. He says in verse 15, now you Philippians know also that in the beginning of the gospel, when I departed from Macedonia, no church shared with me concerning giving and receiving, but you only. For even in Thessalonica, you sent aid once and again for my necessities. He reminds them of what they had done 10 years ago, back when Paul first left Philippi and he traveled to Thessalonica. He says, when I left Philippi and I began my travels, he says, you were having fellowship with me in the preaching of the gospel. You sent not only once, but also twice to meet my needs. Now I want you to remember that the brethren at Philippi, first of all, were poor. But Paul commends them because he says, at this point, you were the only one with regard to receipts and expenditures who was sharing with me in the gospel. It's interesting that institutional brethren have set up, supposedly, the Church of Philippi as the sponsoring church. That is, the one that received funds from various churches so that they could send to the missionary Paul. Well, the number one problem with that is it doesn't fit the context, and I won't take the time to develop it. But not only does it not fit the context, but number two, it takes away from the special message that Paul has. He says, you were the only one in the beginning that had fellowship with me in the preaching of the gospel. At the very beginning, you were the only one who shared with me concerning giving and receiving. I want you to hold your place in Philippians 4 and go over to the book of 2 Corinthians. And I want you to notice how special indeed this gift was from Philippi. When you learn a little bit about the brethren of Macedonia. Because in 2 Corinthians chapter 8 and verses 1 and 2, we notice that Paul says, moreover, brethren, we make known to you the grace of God bestowed on the churches of Macedonia, that in a great trial of affliction, the abundance of their joy and their deep poverty abounded in the riches of their liberality. My point is that the gift given from Philippi to Paul was an expensive gift because they were very poor. That's what Paul says. In fact, in the 11th chapter of the same book, 2 Corinthians 11 and verse 8, he chides the Corinthian brethren because of their carnal mindedness. And he uses an interesting word there. He says, I robbed other churches, taking wages of them to minister to you. And when I was present with you and in need, I was a burden to no one, for what I lacked, the brethren who came from Macedonia supplied. And in everything, I kept myself from being burdensome to you, and so will I keep myself. I robbed other churches. The poor brethren of Macedonia supported me so that I could preach the gospel at Corinth. Thus, the gift that they had sent to Paul was an extremely expensive, marvelous, wonderful gift. And he is commending them. I remember the past 10 years ago, how that concerning giving and receiving, only you had fellowship with me in the preaching of the gospel. And you not only sent it once, but also twice. Perhaps within a 2-week span after I left Philippi, I received one gift, but not only one gift. You know, sometimes it's easy when the crisis arises for everybody to rally. But a month or two or three or four later, what happens? Human nature, and we forget. But the brethren at Philippi did not forget. He says, not only did you sin once, but also you sin twice. to my need. But the real punchline of the point that we're making today is in the 17th verse. Because in verse 17 he says, "Not that I seek the gift, but I seek the fruit that abounds to your account." Here's the real punchline. Paul, why are you so happy? Not because you supplied me with material things. Not because you sent me money so that I could eat or so that I could be comfortable. But I rejoice because the fruit of your gift abounds to your account. It abounds to your cause. That is, when you gave, God was pleased. You're putting treasure in heaven. Paul here is not concerned with consuming, but he's rather concerned with the spiritual blessings that will be given to the brethren at Philippi because of their generosity. Let me ask you a question. Are you content when you see your brother blessed by the service of others? Are you content when you find your brother walking in the Lord, walking faithfully? Does that bring you joy? Is that one of the foremost concerns and considerations that you have in your life? Paul says, "I'm grateful that you sent a gift to me. Not that I need it. Because I'm trusting in the providence of God. I'm grateful that you sent the gift. Number one, because God is pleased. Because I know that now your fruit abounds to your account. In heaven, God is pleased. He is pleased with your sacrificial giving." And they had indeed given sacrificially. They were poor people. And they nearly lost the life of their servant Epaphroditus when he came to Rome to minister to Paul. I want you to hold your place in Philippians 4. And I want you to look over in the book of Proverbs, the 11th chapter. Because there's a principle mentioned by Solomon over there in Proverbs 11. Listen to what Solomon says in Proverbs 11, and I want to begin reading verses 24 and 25. Proverbs 11, 24 and 25. He says, "There is one who scatters, yet increases more. And there is one who withholds more than is right, but it leads to poverty. The generous soul will be made rich, and who waters will also be watered himself." Now, I don't want you to misunderstand me. We're not preaching the gospel of health and wealth here today. The life is just problem-free, you know, the Joel Osteen group. But nonetheless, Solomon says, if you really want to be rich, you learn how to be generous. If you want to find the secret of contentment, you learn how to sow the seed. You know, the farmer understands that. When he sows the seed generously, he reaps generously. Over in the same book, Proverbs the 19th chapter in verse 17. Proverbs chapter 19 in verse 17. Notice what Solomon says again. He says, "He who has pity on the poor lends to the Lord, and he will pay back what he has given." And over in 2 Corinthians chapter 9 and in verse 6, Paul said, "He who sows sparingly will reap sparingly. But he who sows bountifully will reap bountifully." So Paul says, the reason why I'm so happy is not because of the material gain that you've given to me, but rather because I know of the rich blessings that will come to you, because I know that your fruit will abound to your account. That is, that God is pleased. And furthermore, in verse 18, he interjects, he says, "Indeed, I have all and abound. I am full, having received from Epaphroditus the thing sent from you, a sweet-smelling aroma, an acceptable sacrifice, well-pleasing to God." He says, I have all, I abound, I am full. Your gift has met every need, and I'm so grateful for that. I'm grateful because you have ministered to me. You have met every need and met it to the max. I have abundance. I am fully supplied. I have everything that I need. But the satisfaction comes from knowing that their gift was a sweet-smelling aroma that was an acceptable sacrifice that was well-pleasing to God. That was the disposition of Paul. He's not concerned about his well-being. He is concerned about the well-being of the Philippians. That was the secret to his happiness. That your sacrifice had come before God as a sweet-smelling aroma. Your sacrifice has been well-pleasing to God. And for that, Paul said, I am indeed grateful. I am grateful. Now, that's hard to do. You know, it's easy, unfortunately, in a very selfish culture, to think only about me. Only about my needs. Only about my wants. And as I said in the class earlier, every advertisement that we see on television is geared to make you unhappy with your current state. But Paul said, in whatever state I am, I've learned to be content. I'm trusting in the providence of God. And I rejoice in the ministry. I rejoice in the things that you have brought to me. But not because I need them, but rather I rejoice because when you gave, I know that God was pleased with your gift. It's hard to live that way. But if you want to be happy, Paul said, this is the secret of contentment. And furthermore, in verse 19, he then adds this promise. He says, and my God shall supply all your need according to the riches in glory by Jesus Christ. Furthermore, not only is God pleased, but I know that God will do this. I know that my God will supply all your need according to His riches in glory by Jesus Christ. You gave freely, you gave sacrificially, God will not leave you in debt. Not that God is going to provide a Cadillac. That's not the point. You know, the television evangelists that offer their erroneous idea of health and wealth. But that God is going to make sure that you have your needs met. You give out of poverty, and God will make sure that you're cared for according to His riches. And God does not give out of pittance. God provides. Listen again to Solomon in Proverbs. You want to go back over there to the third chapter. In Proverbs, the third chapter, and notice what Solomon says in verses 9 and 10. Proverbs chapter 3 and verses 9 and 10. Where Solomon says, honor the Lord with your possessions. Honor the Lord with your possessions, with the first fruits of all your increase. So your barns will be filled with plenty and your vats overflow with new wine. You bring the first fruits, which means that you bring the best. Whether it's worship, whether it's ministry to a brother or sister in need, whether it's in giving on the first day of the week, whether it's in a Bible study with either a brother who is troubled or one who is not a Christian, you come and you bring your best. You give it to all. You bring your best. And God says, if you give sacrificially, Paul says, I know that God will supply all your need according to His riches in glory by Jesus Christ. Solomon says, honor the Lord with your possessions, with the first fruits of your increase, and your barn will be filled with plenty. God will richly bless you. There is not a gift that God gives that will make you poor. He provides everything we need. And more importantly, He provides us with the rich and wonderful spiritual blessings that we enjoy in Christ. God never promised that we'd be comfortable. That's not the point. Free of persecution and free of trials and tribulations. But He does provide the peace that passes all understanding. And the secret to that and the path to that is you learn to be preoccupied not with yourself, but rather to be preoccupied with the needs and the well-being of others. Consider with me 4 points in this, or 7 points in this section on success in giving. Number one, you give from the heart. That's what Philip, the Philippian brethren, had done. They cared for Paul. They gave from the heart. They didn't give from abundance, but they gave from the heart. Number two, you give as you have opportunity. Paul said, it's been 10 long years since I've heard from you, but that's okay. I'm confident in the providence of God. And the reason why is because you lacked opportunity. But when opportunity arises, you give. And let me tell you something, opportunities abound, brethren. I get emails almost weekly from David Tant concerning the needs of brethren in Jamaica. Opportunities abound. There's certainly, you know, we're certainly not at want for that. Number three, you give to God's service. They ministered to Paul in his distress. Number four, you give consistently. He says, you not only sinned once, but also twice to meet my need. Paul says in 1 Corinthians, the 16th chapter, we do it upon the first day of the week, as God has prospered us. You give, or understand that giving is spiritually beneficial, that it will abound to your account, just as it did to the brethren of Philippi. You give generously, that is, you give out of poverty. And Paul says, it will indeed bring forth fruit that will abound to your account. And you give, and understand that giving is an act of worship, that it is like a sweet-smelling aroma, a sacrifice that goes before heaven and goes before God. You know, if I were going to summarize the fourth chapter of Philippians, it would be very simple. That the real secret to contentment is learning to be preoccupied with the work of God. I don't think we've gotten there yet. I know I haven't. It is being wholly lost in His cause. It is understanding and appreciating and applying the words of a wonderful song, Sweet Will of God, still fold me closer till I am wholly lost in Thee. That's the challenge. Being completely and wholly lost in the cause of Christ. Then we can say with Paul, I have learned to be content in whatever state I am. Circumstances do not trouble me, for I am resting in the power of God. We can say with Paul, I can do all things through Christ, because He's the one who provides the strength. He strengthens me. If you're here today and not a Christian, wonderful step to a wonderful life. And if you wish to be a child of God today, if you wish to be obedient to the gospel and become His child, we certainly would welcome that and rejoice in your decision. We invite you to come as we stand and sing the song to Him.